Since early spring, the U.S. has seen a significant increase in the number of COVID-19 cases. Over that time span, the U.S. has had more than 4 million confirmed cases of the illness, and we've crossed the 150,000 death mark, according to some tallies. Over the past few months, researchers have learned more about the virus that causes the illness, and as we learn more, we get closer to, hopefully, development of vaccines and treatments to combat the spread of the disease and help people recover. Thomas Friedrich is a professor of virology at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. His lab works to understand how pandemic viruses emerge, spread, and cause disease. He has worked on HIV/AIDS, influenza, Zika, and is now working on COVID-19. Tom, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi there. Good to be with you.
Well, you last joined us, I think, a couple months-ish ago. What do you see as some of the key things we've learned since then about this virus?
Well, there are a lot of things that we've learned, and there's a lot of things that, we would like to know. We've evaluated some treatments, as you alluded to at the very beginning there. We found evidence that hydroxychloroquine, which was touted initially as a potential treatment, probably does not work, and in fact may be dangerous for some people to use. We've learned that, from animal studies, that a vaccine is likely quite possible, although we're still not ready to vaccinate humans yet. But there's a lot of optimism that vaccines will become available in the not too distant future. But they are not available yet. And so that means that all of the practices that we've heard about and maybe begun to get a little sick of, remain our best defense. So, masking, social distancing, and so forth.
I want to get into some headlines that people may have seen and get your thoughts on them when it comes to the novel coronavirus. One that was making the rounds for a while, that there are two main strains, or at least that's what the people thought at one point, of the novel coronavirus. So I think just one mutation apart from each other. Concern that the later coming one maybe spread easier than the original one. It wasn't necessarily more harmful, but it spread faster. What is the latest thought on the different strains and whether the difference makes a difference?
Yeah, that's a good question, and the exact kind of thing that that I study in my research. So happy to talk about that. There is this mutation that causes a little change in the protein that the virus uses to get into cells, and so it seems at least plausible that that change could affect the way the virus could transmit from one person to another. And there's some evidence that viruses that have this particular mutation, which we call D614G, are becoming more abundant in the world as time goes on. But there's really not conclusive evidence yet that this mutation is biologically important. So, for example, in our own studies, we've been following the kind of genetic changes in the virus in the Madison area and in the Milwaukee area. And we find that there were viruses that had sort of the old version, the D version in Madison, and they have seemed to have largely died out in Madison in the last couple of months, which would be consistent with the idea that maybe the G version spreads easier. But we didn't find that in Milwaukee. So, Milwaukee had the most, the largest outbreak in Wisconsin by far back in March and April. And a substantial proportion of viruses there had the old version, the D that is supposedly less transmissible. So that virus was going around in Milwaukee just fine back in March and April. We've just sequenced a batch of new viruses from Milwaukee, and so we'll be able to tell more about what's going on there in the near future, but we haven't analyzed that data yet. So all in all, I'm not sure that there's a really big important difference that this mutation confers.
And speaking of mutation, I know viruses mutate. It's part of what they do. Do we have a sense, just what, 8 months into this thing now, of how fast this particular virus is mutating compared to others we might be familiar with?
Yeah. So one thing about coronaviruses in general is that they evolve much more slowly than viruses that we might be familiar with, like influenza and HIV, the ones that I also study. And so I think overall, that's good news. And so we would expect that this novel coronavirus would not, evolve quite as rapidly as influenza. And so far, that seems to be the case. So people have estimated the kind of pace of its mutation and its evolution. And it does seem to be slower than what we would see for HIV or influenza, other kind of fast evolving viruses. On the other hand, the virus is infecting a lot of people. And the more people it infects, the more mutations get made. And so that can kind of make up for a slower overall mutation rate. So as time goes on, I think we still need to watch very closely because, for example, when vaccines become available, people become vaccinated, there will be more like evolutionary pressure on the virus to change. And so we may expect to see more changes as more people become immune through infection or vaccination. But we're just sort of not in a stage where that's going to happen yet.
Talking to Thomas Friedrich, professor of virology at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. As we've heard, he is researching the virus that causes COVID-19. You mentioned immunity. And again, in the headlines, there are, I think it's fair to say, just anecdotal reports from some doctors about their patients or some patients saying they were reinfected. They had it, they were positive, they were negative, and then positive again. Again, I want to emphasize anecdotal. This is not locked down. Can you talk about what we know about immunity, how long it might last after having the disease, and whether someone can catch it again?
Yeah, also good questions and sort of a lot to unpack there. So I'll do it the best I can to be concise. So there's a couple of questions. One is after you get infected and you become immune, how long will that immunity last? There's some concern because when people have studied other coronaviruses, and there are four seasonal coronaviruses that cause the common cold in people, it seems that at least for some of those viruses, your immunity can decrease a lot faster than we might expect than for other viruses. And so you may get them again, a year, a couple of years later, not because those viruses have mutated substantially and evaded your immune defenses, but just because your immunity has worn off, basically. And so there's a lot of concern that this may happen for COVID-19. And we just don't know enough yet to be able to say how long the average person's immunity will last after they are infected and recovered. But so far, it looks like most people make pretty good immune responses to the virus. And so we'd be surprised if people got infected very soon after having a first infection with the novel coronavirus. There have been reports of people testing positive and then negative and then positive again. And that probably does not mean that most of those people got reinfected, but rather it seems like when most people get infected, it takes a while for the body to fully clear the virus, even after symptoms resolve and get better. And so on very sensitive tests that are the kind of tests that you might get like today at the Alliant Energy Center, you may test positive and have a very low amount of virus still in your body. And then so you may spend a long time with a little bit of virus. And so if you got tested multiple times in that phase, that sort of long tail of the infection, you may be positive. And then the amount of virus may go below the threshold of detection. So like the limit of detection for that test, and then may go up again and may go down again. So you may sort of oscillate around just barely being positive. And I suspect that most of these cases, that's what we're seeing. In very unusual circumstances, maybe someone who's immune compromised and can't make a good immune response, you might expect that they could get the virus a couple of times in a short period of time. But that would be probably rare.
I know one hope at various points throughout all of this is the idea that, okay, if enough of us get this, we'll start to develop what's called herd immunity. Enough of us will have a resistance to this disease that will start to slow the spread of it. Are we anywhere near something like that?
Short answer is no. So herd immunity is thought to kick in when a significant proportion of people are immune, either through having been infected before or having gotten vaccinated. And for other viruses, you know, that's been estimated to be like 60% of people, 70 up to 90% of the population or even more has to be immune for that herd immunity to protect people who have not been infected themselves. And even in places that have been really hard hit, like in New York City, they estimate that maybe about 20% of people already have antibodies against the coronavirus. But that means that 80% don't. And so they are still susceptible to further outbreaks. That's very far from herd immunity. And it would take a long time of just letting infection go unchecked for us to get to the point where, you know, 70% of the population of the United States, to pick a number between 60 and 90, you know, would be immune. So we're nowhere close to that, unfortunately.
We'll leave it there for now. Thomas, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
All right. Thanks very much, Rob.
Thomas Friedrich is a professor of virology at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. His lab works to understand how pandemic viruses emerge, spread, and cause disease. He has studied HIV/AIDS, influenza, Zika, and is now working on COVID-19. And he joined us today to talk about what we've learned recently about the novel coronavirus.